You're listening to the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 142.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, how's it going, guys? First off, my apologies. This really is Alex Pardo. People I talk to on the phone tell me that I don't sound like myself, and that's because I am just starting to get over a really bad cold that kind of took me out of commission for the last 4 to 5 days, just totally knocked me out, had the family sick. And so my apologies, my voice is like, it might even crack and give out on me. So my sincere apologies. I did the very best I could in this podcast interview, and I'm excited about it. I'm excited for you. And also for me, cause I got some really cool things out of it. I interview Andy McFarlane. Andy's the dude is just a ninja. He's awesome. Self-made real estate entrepreneur, started from nothing, you know, really just had to overcome a bunch of challenges. And currently has a 7-figure-a-year real estate business. And you know, Andy got started back in 2004. He got fired from his W-2 job, working at a loading dock, and he went into real estate full time. And he wholesales properties now in 3 different markets: Utah, New Mexico, and Indiana. He's got a team of about 18 people, and does hundreds of deals a year. You know, primarily wholesaling. So about 80% wholesale, 20% flipping. And, you know, guy, just a really good guy, you know, puts out great content on iloverealestatestories.com. Definitely check that out. And on this particular episode, you know, we get into the nitty gritty. What does this team look like? What tips and advice does he have when it comes to hiring, building a team, scaling? We get into marketing. We get into how he transitioned into some different markets. You know, he's also an educator, and so he works with a lot of people through his mastermind. And, you know, so he sees a lot of common mistakes that people make. We get into that and how you can avoid them. And just a lot of like really, really valuable content that can help elevate your real estate business. So, yeah, let's just jump right into it. I think you're really going to like this one. Mr. Andy McFarlane, what's going on, my man? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing awesome, buddy. Really appreciate you taking the time to jump on here, man. You don't know this, but highly respect you. I've known about you for years now, and even though this is actually, ironically enough, the first time that we're chatting, you know, you and I were talking before we hit the record here. We have a lot of mutual friends, and I've been following a lot of what you've been doing from afar, man. Really respect you and love the content that you and I know Justin Williams. You guys have an education business, and some of the things that you guys put out, your blog, I Love Real Estate Stories. I know we're gonna get into that at some point here in this podcast interview, but yeah, man, love what you're doing. And it's just awesome to see your growth, even though I don't know you. You know, one of the things I really want to get into, and part of the reason I wanted to have you on is because, you know, the audience, and oftentimes I have people coming to me asking me questions about how to grow, how to scale, hiring and building a team. And man, you've nailed that from as much as I can see. I know you wholesale and you operate in 3 different markets and you got a pretty big team. So I'm just excited to have you on here and kind of pick your brain. And I think people are going to get a lot of value from this interview.
Awesome. Well, humbling. That's humbling that you said those things, and I appreciate it. And I'll do the best I can to share with whatever you think will be of value to everybody out there.
Yeah, man, that'd be great. So actually, I want to do something a little bit different. Typically, when we have you know, a guest on here, I always kind of like to start with, you know, how you got started in the business and where you are today, that kind of thing. But I think I covered a lot of that in the introduction part of this. So why don't we kind of fast forward to, for the people that don't know who you are, what does your business look like today? Because I know you got started, I think, back in 2004. And so, you know, you've done all types of deals. And I think wholesaling seems to kind of be your bread and butter. But maybe if you can fill in some of the gaps and kind of give us a 30,000-foot view of what your business looks like today.
Yeah, I've got a few different businesses, so I'll touch on those. But the main business I think you're talking about is my house flipping and wholesaling business. And I do that in Utah, New Mexico, and Indiana. And what it looks like today, we do about 25 to 30 deals a month. 80% of those are wholesale, 20% are retail flips. I do retail flip in all 3 markets that I'm in, so I will do that. But that's kind of what it looks like from that. Now, just to touch on the other businesses, help some investors with online marketing, some like specific people, one person per area. I do have some rental properties. I do lend some money. And like you said, I do some educating. Justin Williams and I have a mastermind. We have a few different levels of program, but a mastermind called Seven Figure Flipping, which is really cool. So that's what I do.
That's huge, man. Awesome. So let me ask you this, because I think a lot of the people that listen to this particular show are intermediate investors, you know, and what I mean by intermediate is they've done deals, you know, maybe they close on average 2 to 5 deals a month. But I think people are always looking for more, right? Like they want to do more deals. They want more volume. They obviously want to make more money. At what point and how is really what I want to know. How did you bridge the gap from getting to the point where, you know, you were doing a couple of deals a month, you know, maybe a handful a month, to the point where now you guys are doing 25 to 30 deals a month? Like, I know that's a loaded question, but how did you kind of bridge that gap?
Oh my goodness, man. The short answer to that is I've got amazing people on my team. And although they work with me, they work for themselves within my organization, right? So I've got an amazing group of people, and it's like I've pushed this snowball up the hill a little bit, and now it's rolling down the other side. And I can't stop it if I wanted to, because there's all these amazing people that are like thriving and winning within the organization, doing these things that like they're doing it for themselves and for everybody else in the team with them. But like, so I can't even stop it if I wanted to. But what made me think about doing that? I mean, it was kind of step by step. I can tell you guys, like, 6-7 years ago, I was a one-man band doing everything, and a lot of us can relate to that. Anywhere you're at in your real estate journey, typically people start with doing everything. So I did everything. I sent the marketing, I answered the phone, I went to see the sellers, I signed the contract, I did my own books, I did my own project management, I did my own transaction coordination, I did everything. And then my mind got opened a few years ago when I got I actually got a piece of direct mail, and I was a student of marketing, like a lot of people are that are wholesalers,
right?
And you know, the Dan Kennedys and all that stuff. So I got this piece of marketing that was a lumpy mail piece. And I was like, it was interesting to me, not because of what they were advertising, but because it was lumpy mail. So I called, it was actually an inner tube, that inside the inner tube, there was these 3D glasses. And then around the three, there was like this, this thing you had to put the glasses on to read, right? So I was super interested in that. I read it. It said something like, are you seeing your books clearly? So this was a bookkeeping company that had marketed to me. I was not interested in their bookkeeping services. I was interested in where they ordered this lumpy mail from. So I called the owner and asked them. She told me that, but then she told me about, you know, the bookkeeping services. And that was the first thing. They talked me into a meeting, and that was the first time, you know, they talked me into like giving them a chance in the books. So that was the first thing I outsourced, was my books. And then I did some project management outsourcing, and then answering the phones, and then marketing. And it just kind of grew from there, step by step. And then as I stepped out of it and got these amazing people in my life and on my team, then it just kind of grew organically from there. So you can dive deeper into that if you want to, but
yeah, man, absolutely. And actually, so I got several questions I want to kind of follow up on, but I wanted to just mention one of the cool things. I heard you on a podcast probably about a year ago, and I forget what podcast it was on, but you were sharing a story about how, I think you were out to lunch with a gentleman who got one of your wholesale properties and you didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring it up is because I thought it was super cool that you've been able to create this business, scale it to a point, and step outside, which is what I believe most people are after, that somebody knew about one of your deals before you even knew about it, which I thought was just, that was sweet, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, I don't remember if it was that guy in particular, but there was a guy that was cleaning garbage cans. You know, they come around and clean your garbage cans, and he was cleaning mine, and I just start talking to him, you know? And he said, oh yeah, I buy some properties, flip properties. I'm like, cool. And so he starts telling me about these couple of properties he flips. And then as we got deeper in the conversation, he found out that I'd sold them to him, and I didn't even know I'd sold them to him. He's like, awesome. you're that company.
Oh,
like,
man, that's so awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Very cool, man. So, okay. So since you started kind of touching on, you're surrounded by great people, what does your team look like? Cause the last I heard, you had, I don't know, probably 12, 15 people. Again, this was going back about a year ago that I heard you on a podcast. What does your team look like today for you to be able to do deals in 3 different markets?
Yeah. So the team looks like right now. So I've got people that answer the phone. So I've got 4 people that answer the phone, but they also do a couple other things. 4 people answer the phone. I've got 7 acquisition managers. I've got 1 dispositions guy. He has an assistant. I've got 2 transaction coordinators. I've got a project manager. And then I've also got a sales manager. And then to the guy that runs the whole organization, I've got a COO who also does some marketing stuff, who runs the whole organization. So they all answer to him. So that's the whole team. It's probably 17, 18 people in that specific company. And then we have the other services company that was some people too, but in the wholesaling company and housekeeping company, that's the team.
Okay. Got it. And as far as compensation is concerned, specifically, like, you know, your acquisitions managers, your dispositions managers, you have them on commission based?
Correct. All of them are commission based.
Okay. Got it. And so, I'm guessing somewhere probably between 10 and 20% is what you're paying them, if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah. And it cost me about 20%. across every deal for acquisitions, dispositions, right? So I currently pay my acquisition managers 15% of the gross profit on a deal that they negotiate. If they don't touch it, they don't get it, but if they touched it, they got it. And then also my disposition guy gets 5%, or the dispositions department, I should say, gets 5% of that too. So there's 20% coming off the top to acquisitions and dispositions, like the sales, right?
Okay. And when you first got it started, that you were building a team, like how much, what kind of volume were you doing at that point? Because I think, you know, one of the challenges that people have come to me is, hey, Alex, it's me and a VA. You know, I want to start to build a team, but I'm only doing one or two deals a month. And so how do I get those rock star acquisition managers when they might only be making 15, 20% of, you know, two deals I'm closing a month? And so what advice would you give to people that want to start to kind of, you know, take off some of the hats like you were talking about? You know, you were the acquisitions guy, the marketing guy, the dispositions. People want to remove those hats, but at what point should they start to bring people on board? And how do they bring those rock stars when they might not be doing 5, 10, 15 deals a month? And so maybe that acquisitions person, you know, might not be making that much money initially.
Yeah, that's tough, man. There's a lot of different directions you can go with that. Number one, I would say you always need to be living on less than you make and investing the difference. So if your back's against the wall, so you have no time because you're working all the time, you have no money, your back's against the wall there, right? So, but if you've got a little bit of time and a little bit of money, so now you can invest in yourself and invest in your business.
Yeah.
So I would say hire for where you're going. So people don't be thinking about like staying small, keeping it all and grinding it out, right? If you know you're going towards five deals a month and you're doing one currently, hire for what that looks like when you're at five deals a month, right? Because that's where then you can like look and say, okay, I need an acquisitions guy, right? And if you get an acquisitions guy, maybe they can have a couple of roles at the time. Like you might be able to have an acquisition guy that's answering the phone, comping his own appointments and going to see people, right? And maybe they do a little disposition, but you can kind of have them wear multiple different hats until you get to a scale where that you can just break them out and have them, you know, have their own individual role and hat. Like for us, all the organization, we got 18 people, whatever we have right now. It used to be me, right? So it was one person doing all those 18 roles, and now we've broken out into like these little subcategories and subparts of that. So hire for where you're going, and also have people wear multiple hats if you have to, right?
Yeah.
To do that at the very beginning, but definitely hire for where you're going. Like don't think about like the money today and the investment today. Think about like, what do I want to be? Like my first lead manager, we hired her and paid her quite a bit of money because she was highly recommended from another place. She just was great at what she was. And we hired her because we knew she ultimately would be the manager of my lead managers. So when we hired her, she was just the one answering the phone and we were paying her a decent amount of money, right? But now she is managing three people underneath her in that whole process. So we hired for where we were going. I always knew that we were going to grow, right?
Yeah.
So that's higher for where you're going.
I love that. So kind of play the movie forward, have a vision for what you want your business to look like, and maybe don't get too ahead of yourself, but where do you want to be in a year, 2 years, and then start to kind of hire in that direction?
Absolutely.
Love it. So man, because this is an area that, I mean, you could teach a seminar on this and we can spend so much time about, you know, hiring and building a team. But for as much as we can cover here in this podcast, what kind of general tips or any advice that you can share when it comes to hiring and just finding the right people? Because man, you know, I've been building my team here for the last 3 years and I've made some bad hires. And my experience anyway, I don't know if you can relate to this, is when you don't hire the right person, it really sets you back because you spend so much time, energy, and resources training that person. And if it's not the right culture fit, or if the person just doesn't get up to speed, or there's no accountability in place, I find that, you know, it just really sets you back. You know, not only what you could, the opportunity cost of what that person could have been doing, but just the time and energy that you invest into the person, you know? So what, any just general tips or advice you can share when it comes to like hiring and making sure you bring the right people on board?
Yeah. And like you said, absolutely. I've seen that where it sets you back when you hire the wrong person. So the magic is in the people. The magic is in the people. So if you hire the wrong person, that's just a step in your journey to getting the right person. Don't let it beat you back and like, oh, I'm a one-man band. I hired people. That doesn't work for me anymore. And I'm just going to retract and just be a one-man band again. No, the magic is in the people. You need to get things done through other people, right? So hiring the right people, if you hire the wrong person first, that's okay. I just showed you like, why were they the wrong person, right? Oh, I need a person like this now. And then go find the person and make that investment with the person. Because when you get a good team of people around you, that's where the magic starts to happen. But the next tip I would say with that is, would you want to work for you? How are you treating those people? You know?
Yeah.
So I don't look at anybody on my team as like, I shudder when people say, okay, he's my boss. I'm nobody's boss, man. Like I want to be, I work with people. They're on my team.
I love
and,
it.
And just the way you think of somebody, I've heard this before. I say like, hear your words and see your soul. How you talk, like people can tell how you really feel about them. So treat someone how you would want to be treated. would you want to work for you? Right. And I see that a lot where people are like tyrants and they'll treat people bad. And they'll just try to like treat them like units of production. Look, like, people have unique skills and abilities. Find somebody that has unique skill and ability and show them how them doing that with you can be 1 + 1 = 3. And if you can do that and show them how they're going to accomplish their goals by working with you and the other team, then they're going to be happy. They're going to continue to do those things. But don't ever treat people like units of production, right? Because there's more to this life than just making money and grinding on people to step on them and get to the top, right?
So powerful. So, I love that you said
that. And Zig Ziglar said, I think he said, helping other people get what they want and you'll get what you want.
Bingo.
Think of others first. Give first and then you'll receive. So that's a good tip.
Yeah, no, that I'm telling you, man, that is super powerful because, yeah, I think sometimes people just, they hire with the wrong mentality, I should say. You know, sometimes it's out of sight, out of mind. They want to get something off their plate. And then, you know, if there's no systems, there's no accountability, there's no processes in place, when that person fails, they blame them and not themselves, right? And so I think it's just about having the right mindset. And what you said, man, I think it's worth repeating, is just treat people the way that you want to be treated. And I love the fact of, you know, asking yourself that question, would you want to work for you? You know, and if the answer is not a 100% hell yes, then you need to really like look internally before you start hiring people, because just something's off there.
Absolutely.
So that's awesome, man. So let me ask you this. Let's kind of pivot. I know, you know, we touched on the fact that you're operating in three different markets. What was it that led you to say, you know what, it makes sense for me to look into another market versus going even deeper in your market in Utah? Like, at what point is it, do you find that it's a balance between, you know, there's opportunity in my market or there's a shiny object in a different market? Like, how do people know when they should potentially start looking into other markets?
Yeah, and there's this mentality, right? Everybody always thinks the grass is greener, like, oh, it's easier to do it here, here, or here, right? And I can tell you across the wholesaling perspective, if it's easy to get a deal, it's hard to sell a deal, right? So wherever you're at in your market, you can do this stuff there. Don't look for the greener pasture somewhere else. So for me, how do I know? I started in Utah because I live in Utah. And generally, that's why people start where they are. It's proximity, right? So I was there. How did I know, like, should I drill deeper or should I go somewhere else? The answer for me is I'm always trying to drill deeper. And people that have in our mastermind have talked about this recently. I'm always trying to squeeze more juice out of what we're doing. How can we be better? How can we be better marketing? How can we be better operationally? How can we drill deeper with what we've got, right? While simultaneously looking towards, do we want to grow for the future? So what we've chosen to do, we were looking at an expansion fourth quarter this year, and I squashed it because I said, no, we want to go deeper. So I put a couple of initiatives on the table of what we're trying to do to go deeper where we're currently at. So I feel like you should always be as tight and as good as you can be operationally. Control that. And don't be like that, you know, just out there just trying to spray and praying, right? Like,
right.
Be the best you can be. And I'm always trying to analyze the numbers and say, how can we be better? How can we be tighter? What procedures can we put in place to just squeeze more out of this thing? Because I think it's irresponsible, especially if the market shifts. You need to be tight with what you're doing and be in tune with that and not just be like, whatever, I'm just going to grow for growth's sake, right? I'm not trying to grow for growth's sake. People want to like, you know, oh, I want to, Andy does 20 deals, 30 deals a month. I want to do 40 deals a month, right? I want to make a bunch of widgets and lose money on each one of them, right? Like, no, I'm all about like, let's grow. Let's try to grow profitably and responsible growth.
Yeah, right. So an inch wide and a mile deep, basically.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. And then when you can responsibly go on, and you get economies of scale, right? That's what I've got, because we've got these systems we've built within these three states. And as we go as deep as we want to go, when I expand into a fourth market, if I choose to do that, I'm going to have all of my economies of scale already in place. I've already, you know, I just have to send out the marketing. I just have to find a few people on the ground and find some key relationships, but everything else, like, I've already got these systems dialed in that I can bring somewhere else. Right. But that puts stress on your machine. So be very aware that when you grow, your team will get stress up the line, and you need to be aware of like, how are they going to handle that stress? And you need to be able to process through that so you can grow responsibly.
Right, right. And I think I heard, man, in probably one of those podcasts that I heard you on, is you kind of take a little bit of a different approach. You don't really consider it virtual wholesaling, right? Like, you actually have one like physical acquisition manager kind of boots on the ground in your different markets, right?
Yep. It's not virtual. And I mean, I'm going to say this on the podcast, right? I don't know of anybody that's actually doing virtual, like they're not, nobody's in that market.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody doing that successfully. So I challenge, maybe somebody is that, but I don't know anybody doing that. I've never been there and whatever. And I'm, you know, I've got no team there, but I'm ripping deals out there. I don't know anybody doing that.
Got it. So most of your team then is in Utah, but you have one person that's responsible for acquiring the properties, but the calls are coming into like your office there in Utah. You have your lead managers that are picking up calls from sellers in those three different markets, and you have your dispositions guy in Utah. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, got it. As far as the acquisitions people that you hire, whether it's locally and they're in Utah and your different markets, who's the kind of person that you're looking for? Are you looking, because my experience has been is people that have some sort of a sales background, but not necessarily been in real estate, tend to be better than those that, you know, you kind of pluck and they've been realtors or they've been investors. What type of person do you look for when it comes to that acquisitions role? Because I often find that that's kind of one of the first hires that people want to try to make, right? So I'm curious, like, who you look for.
And a lot of people that are successful out of the gate, if you analyze their success, it's because they were a good acquisition person and they could outsource the team around them first, because it's such a crucial role. So what do you look for in that? People think, oh, a salesperson, right? They don't have to have necessarily real estate experience, but, and I would have said probably different things over the years, but right now I would say the best salesperson is somebody that's got a big heart and big ears.
Wants to help,
big heart and big ears, right? People think sales and they're thinking like used car salesman or whatever. That's garbage, man. The best sales, big heart and big ears, that actually cares about something. It's not a tactic they read in a book that I'm going to remember your name and I'm going to say your name and shake your hand and smile at you.
Right.
That's not it, man. It's the person that actually cares, that goes into that seller and was like, cares. And then that person can tell that they care about them, right? We all can tell when somebody's faking or not. So somebody that actually cares, they're not faking it, they get that rapport, and then big ears and that they care, and then they'll shut up and listen.
Yeah.
Like, just let the person talk, because you're there to serve that person, and they're going to tell you how to serve them because you care about them. And when they tell you how to serve them, just do it. Just, okay, so you said you want A, B, and C. Is that correct? Yes. Now I'm going to give you A, B, and C this way.
Yeah.
Can we do business if I gave you that? Boom. That's it, right? Big heart, big ears. So that's important.
Yeah. And I think a lot of acquisitions managers and just one man, one woman shows, you know, they go on these appointments and all they see are dollar signs, right? They don't see a person there that has needs, that has challenges. And so they don't look at themselves as a problem solver. They're trying to get the deal no matter what the cost is. And I think that's just that's a terrible approach. So you're just looking for those kind-hearted people that obviously can communicate clearly, that are there to, like you said, big heart and big ears. You know, they're there to listen and solve a problem and figure out how they can be the solution.
Yep, absolutely. Those are my most successful acquisition managers, big heart, big ears.
Okay, got it. As far as, you know, you've built a team of, you said what, 18 people you said?
Yeah, roughly. I'd have to count, but yeah, I think so.
On average, I mean, are you finding these people kind of like through your network, through your inner circle, friends of friends, or are you going to, you know, Craigslist, ZipRecruiter, some of these places to go find your team members?
We've done both, but I would say our most successful hires by and large have been coming from Warm Network and also people that we've kind of, that I've recruited, that I've like kind of talked into coming to work for me. You know what I'm saying? Or work with me, you know what I'm saying? But people, I see in them a unique ability. I'm like, man, you'd be awesome over here. And I kind of talk them into it, right? So I'm always looking for talent, right? If there's somebody that's a talented person, I look and say, how can I align your interests with mine? How can I use your unique ability to come and bless the lives of everybody on our team? Let's get you over here and help you win with everybody here.
100%, man. So let me ask you this. I'm just kind of curious. What are some of the, you know, you and Justin, you get the opportunity, you run this mastermind, and I know you guys coach people as well. What are some of those common pitfalls that you see investors make? And then more importantly, you know, what's the advice that you can give them on how they can kind of navigate those landmines, and avoid those mistakes?
Yeah, the pitfalls are varied. I see lots of, one of the biggest things people get from the masterminds in general, especially our mastermind, is you're around a group of people who are doing bigger things. And it sounds crazy, but like that mindset, because for me, when you get around people, you're around somebody that's doing 10 deals a month, 20 deals a month, it just like that right there will give you permission to feel like you can do it yourself, because you're seeing them, you're talking to them, they're human being, right?
Definitely.
A lot of times we think these people are like untouchable, right? Like, oh, this guy does all these deals. They're a normal human beings. So when you see that and it clicks for you that it could happen for you, right? Not that just that they could do it, but that you could do it too. That's a big thing. And then you can, once your mind is open to that, then you put the steps in place to get that. So one of the big pitfalls is, one, they don't think they can do it. They don't think big enough. So once they think big enough, then the next thing is, the pitfall is people that are reluctant to outsource, reluctant to hire, reluctant to trust other people. Mm. I think some people have trust issues and they're like, you know, I just want to do everything myself. And that's not the way that I grow. And that's not the way that most organizations grow. Richard Branson probably owns 100 different businesses and he doesn't even run those businesses, right? Other people run it for him. He doesn't know what's going on in the, you know, the deep dark corners of one of his businesses, right? He has to trust people to do that. So I think people can be successful that realize, hey, there are other people that can do things for me, with me. that are good too. So that, like, that's a pitfall. People say, I don't trust anybody. How do you trust somebody to do something for you? You know? Yeah. So you got to get over that.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. No, I totally get it. It makes a lot of sense. And I think people struggle with that, right? I think, you know, it took me, I got started in 2005, and it probably wasn't until like 4 or 5 years into the business that I finally wrapped my head around the fact that 70, 75% of me, even though I think I'm better at doing something than most people, even if that's true, which most of the times it's not, there's other people that are a lot better at me at some of this stuff that I do in my business. But even if it's not, 70% of someone's better than 100% of me, because there's only one of me, and there's so many hats that you have to wear in this business. And I think people have a lot hard time of letting go of control. You know, they think like they're losing control of their business when they bring people on, but I think it's the exact opposite.
Right. Absolutely, man. Sometimes you're so in the weeds doing these little things that you can't even see the business. You need to be able to get above that every once in a while, right? I've heard this say before. I think it's in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, talking about leadership versus management. Management is like, all right, everybody, chop down these trees, sharpen up your saws. We're making awesome progress, giving incentives and pushing people through this forest, right? The leader is the guy that's able to, he's not chopping the trees. He's not, you know, getting people incentivized to like push through these trees. The leader is the guy that climbs the tree and says, we're chopping in the wrong forest. Right.
Yeah.
So if you're spending so much time in chopping trees or in the management of like stuff, you can't be elevated above that and say, we're chopping trees in the wrong forest. We need to pivot. We need to shift. And all of us, I mean, everybody listening to this that owns the business, right? You have to have that vision, that leadership of like, where are we going? What are we doing? Or else all the people underneath you, they need somebody to follow. They need to know that, you know, you're chopping trees in the right forest, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, man, that's kind of a perfect segue, because one of the things I wanted to find out with you is, you know, you have a team of roughly around 18 people. One of the things that we do is we do every Monday morning like a team weekly huddle.
Yep.
I'm curious, what do you do something like that? I'm sure you guys have team meetings or huddles, whatever you call them. What does that kind of look like for you as the leader? How do you structure those, and how have you found it to be most efficient throughout the years?
Yeah, I've got 3 key meetings in the week. I think the one meeting you're talking about, that weekly huddle, we used to do on Mondays, we now do on Tuesday mornings. But that Tuesday morning, everybody in the team gets together, and if they're virtual, then they'll Zoom call in, like a Skype type of a thing. Mm-hmm. And everybody, the first part of it, for the first 5 minutes, we just talk about kind of good news from last week, everybody catching up for the weekend or whatever. And then we dive into numbers. We go position by position, and they share 2 or 3 key numbers. You know, how was your week? It's not like, it's a number, right? We put that number in the box, the accountability number. So if they hit that number, it's attaboys, it's applause. We have some like grab bags and stuff that people get that. If they don't hit the number, it's like, okay, that's accountability for them. They need to hit that next week. And then that takes a few minutes. And then we go over things we need to discuss as a team at large, right? Just whatever that happens to be that week. And at the end of it's like an hour. At the end of that, it's like, all right, go team. Like, everybody go knock it out of the park next week. We'll talk next week. So that's, everyone's on the same page after that meeting.
Okay. Can you share what some of those, you know, those KPIs and you know, anybody listening that hasn't heard that, the key performance indicators, some of the key metrics that you really need to track and measure in your business? Do you mind sharing maybe a couple of those KPIs for like the different positions that you have them report on?
Yeah, I'll share for that. And by the way, from 10,000 foot view, this all comes from, and I think a lot of people in the real estate industry know this, a couple of years ago, the book Traction
Gino Wickman, great book.
Gino Wickman, it's a great book. So read Traction so you can build your own accountability numbers. But specifically for the wholesaling business, if you look at my sheet, I'm going to go top of my head. Marketing manager reports on kind of what marketing he sent out for the week, how much he sent out, what our gross response was, right? How many incoming phone calls and stuff we got from that marketing. And also he reports on which projects he's working on. And then we got the lead intake manager. She reports on the number of leads we got in for that week, and then also the number of outbound calls they made. So she does that. The acquisition people, they report on the number of appointments that were set for them, the number of appointments they went on, and then how many contracts they got. And they also say, like, sellers that are on fire. You know, like, I got 2 contracts this week, but I got these 2 people that I'm going to sign up for them this week. They're on fire. We're going to get that. Dispositions guy, he reports on the number of properties we sold that week, meaning our end buyers that contracted with us. We got contracts signed and earnest money in. He also reports on how many buyers he added to the buyers list. Transaction coordination, they report on how many deals that we closed that week. And also, they report how many deals we had to give up money on. And give up money, it's like sometimes you get, you know, you've got a fee, at whatever wholesale fee, right? But at the end of closing, either the seller or your buyer, end buyer, is like, oh, I didn't want to have to do this, right?
Right.
They always kick you at the end. So our transaction coordinator is incentivized to not give up money, or to, you know, to do what she needs to do to not do that.
Okay.
So she reports on that. Project manager, what does he report on? Oh, goodness. I'd have to pull up the numbers on stuff. But that's pretty much it. Those are the main key positions.
Got it. No, that's very valuable, man. And I'm curious, and this is kind of a selfish question, but, and this is something I'm dealing with now, is I also have a transaction coordinator on my team. And, you know, sometimes there's hairy deals that we deal with, you know, a lot of liens, violations. Sometimes it's a short sale. Sometimes it's something that maybe somebody on the team doesn't necessarily know how to handle. Do you find yourself getting kind of looped in into the weeds with certain deals when you have a team member that doesn't really know how to tackle something? And if so, how do you kind of approach that, or how do you navigate through that?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, all these deals are hairy, right? We all know this. The deals that all of us touch generally are like have some hair on them. Yeah. Generally, there's a couple layers before that. So my transaction team, there's a guy that the guy on our team, they go to his lead, their lead, and then past him, it goes to my COO, and then past it would get to me. But really, stuff generally doesn't get up to me that way. So no, I don't really have to deal with that, but I mean, you have to deal with some of that stuff, right? Like if it's just you, you have to deal with those things. You have to power through that. But here's how I'd say main tip for transaction coordination. I told my people this earlier this year. It's a communication and seeing through the transaction. Yeah. Communication with the buyers and sellers, setting expectations and letting them know. Because a lot of stuff that happens at closing is like, I didn't know I had to pay my taxes. Right. I didn't know that this or that. Right. So communication is huge. I tell my transaction coordinator, communicate and see through the transaction. That means like, if you know there's going to be a hiccup down the road, like look at that and see, we're going to have this problem right here and start nipping it in the bud right now versus so waiting for it to blow up. Communication is seeing through it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Love it, man. Love it. Hey, man, I would, I don't think I'd be doing my job if we don't kind of dive into a little bit of the marketing stuff. I know direct mail is one of the ways. I believe you're still currently getting a lot of your deals. Is that right?
Yes. A lot of deals from direct mail.
Yeah, because direct mail, obviously, you can scale that. And that I think that's one of the huge benefits about direct mail. Are you guys also cold calling?
We are not currently cold calling. I have experimented with that in the past. And okay. I know that does work, but we haven't bolted on that part of our business yet. I know people that are. They're doing it successfully. We haven't yet.
Okay, so is your main, would you say your main marketing channel is direct mail?
Direct mail and online efforts,
okay.
Both PPC and SEO. But yeah.
Okay. Okay, got it. As far as direct mail, you know, one of the things I see a lot of people doing is they're trying to get like the magic list, right? Like what's the list that nobody is hitting that, you know? And so I see all these wholesalers out there and they're hitting, you know, 5 to 10 different lists, but what's kind of the balance? Like in your opinion, at what point do you start adding different lists versus just focusing on 1, 2, or maybe 3? Right out of the gate. And I think a lot of this depends on your marketing budget, but you know, generally speaking, what's kind of your opinion on that?
Yeah. And generally speaking, I look at marketing as like a target. The center of the target is the most highly targeted prospects. And then as you move out, you get diminishing returns as you move out in these outer rings, right? So the center of that target would be niche lists. So people like the probates, the inheritance, the 60 to 120 day lates, the tax lates, the code enforcement, that type of stuff, right?
Yep.
So if you've got limited marketing budget, but you've got more time, then you can go and dig through those lists and you can mail those lists, you can call those lists, you can door knock those lists, right? And that can be highly effective. But if you're trying to, you'll get diminishing returns as you move out. But if you do like more kind of just bulk direct mail, if you will, like to equity lists or owner occupants or whatever, you're going to hit some of those niches within that. And it's just more of like, you know, you're just going to just hit those people more frequently. So if you got a limited budget, definitely hit the niches. But if you're just like looking to get more scale, you're going to get scale from just direct mail at large and just other marketing methods. So I don't know if that made sense to you, but
yeah, no, 100%. And as far as your follow-up system, Andy, what does that look like? Like, are you hitting these people every 6 weeks? Are you hitting them 6, 7, 8 times? Like what does the follow-up system look like specifically for the direct mail?
So for direct mail, if you're on my list, you're going to hear from me every month. And then once you call into us, you're going to be in autoresponders for us. We do some texts and voicemails, but primarily my sales rep that's tagged to you, they are going to be like the human effort, right? They're going to be following with you. Because there's the one thing that you can do, like the mechanical stuff. You can do the email autoresponders and the text and all that stuff. But the other thing is that human approach. And I want my humans, my sales manager, my sales reps to be touching those person because they know that person. They know the circumstance of that person. They know how to talk to them and speak to them, right? Because we all are marketed to all day long with emails and all this stuff, and we ignore it. So I want them to be the primary follow-up. So that's currently how we go.
Got it. And do you guys have, I mean, is it like kind of like a round robin approach where, you know, leads are assigned to different lead managers or acquisitions reps? Or like, how do you decide who on your team is taking ownership of a lead? Or is it just, you know, whoever meets with them gets the deal, whoever talks to them, like how do you kind of decide? Because I know you have several different lead managers and acquisitions managers. Just curious how you kind of like divide and conquer, I guess.
Yeah, the lead managers, like, it's every other. So my sales reps in the different states, there's 2 reps there. So it's like one lead comes in, it's going to this rep, the next lead, so it's every other. The only exception to that is if a lead comes in after hours and my sales reps want to jump on that lead, they can jump the round robin by jumping on that lead. So okay. That's just a little way I can incentivize. Hey, you want more leads?
I like that.
Go get after it. Go hustle. Yeah. You know?
Love that, man. Love that. Awesome, man. Well, hey, let's start to kind of wind down here. This is one of the questions I always like to ask. And hopefully I'm not kind of putting you on the spot, but I didn't want you to like think of an answer. But what, you know, you and I think are in our mid 30s. We're pretty young. Rewind the clock 10, 15 years. What's the advice that you would give your 20, 25 year old Andy McFarland? Like, what would you tell yourself knowing what you know now?
That's a phenomenal question. Surround yourself with people who are where you want to be. Awesome. You become who you surround yourself with. Absolutely do that. And then those people will help you to think bigger and see, because I never, 15 years ago, Andy McFarland working on a loading dock, like what I thought was possible, like I had no idea what was in store for me. And I think right now I still have no idea what's in store for me in the next 15 years. Right.
Yeah.
So
right.
Surround yourself with good people. You are who you surround yourself with and what you listen to, what you allow into your world. Right. So be very aware, guard that, guard what you allow into your world.
You know, that's why when people come to me and they say, hey, what, you know, what should I learn? What should I be doing? You know, one of the first things I think about is I say, you're your best investment. So invest in yourself. You know, every day you should be thinking, you should be, you know, you should be, there should be some sort of spirituality. Like I'm, you know, obviously I'm a Christian. And so, you know, my faith is a big part of my life. And so whatever that might look like for you, investing in yourself, being connected to a higher power, whether it's God or whatever it is, and not to get too spiritual here, but I think, you know, making sure that you're growing as a person every single day should be your primary focus. And I think if you do that, obviously you have to take action. It's not just going to fall in your lap. Assuming you're doing that, I really think that's when the growth starts to happen. And I think about the saying, you know, that the rising tide raises all ships. When I hear you speaking about surrounding yourself with people that are high achievers and giving yourself permission to think bigger, it's inevitable that when you kind of, and I think that's why masterminds are so powerful, that when you surround yourself with the right kinds of people and, you know, high level thinkers and achievers, it's almost inevitable for you to just naturally grow as a person, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I love the fact that you said you don't want to get too spiritual, but that's okay. I will. That's kind of who I am a little bit too. The Sermon on the Mount, right? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. So it starts with surround yourself with good people, like-minded people, stuff, but like, why not surround yourself with like the best role model, right? Why not surround yourself in like
totally
with Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ? So, yeah, I think it starts there. And as you do that, if you seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, all these other things will be added to you. And yeah, absolutely. So that's my advice. I try to live that every day. So that's part of what's made me successful, I know.
Very cool, man. Very cool. Well, hey, Andy, man, before we wrap it up, can you talk a little bit about your passion project that you do with your brother, Jason? ILoveRealEstateStories.com. Highly you know, recommend that you guys go check it out. But can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about it. So ILoveRealEstateStories.com. I Love Real Estate Stories is a YouTube channel. I started with my older brother like 4 years ago. He's a videographer, and I'm a real estate entrepreneur. So I said, hey, just come work with me and you tell my stories in a video standpoint. So YouTube, so you can go I Love Real Estate Stories on YouTube, and we've got those. Those of you that have been following us for a while know that about 9 months ago, I haven't made a video in about 9 months. And not to get too, I'll get a little bit personal. My younger brother worked for me for 3 years and he passed away 9 months ago. So,
God, man.
Yeah. So I haven't made the last video. If you go on that site is you'll see the last video. It's basically an announcement saying that my little brother passed away. So since then we've been working on another project, another passion project, which we're going to be rolling out at Flip Hacking Live. I'm planning on rolling it out. It's a little nerve wracking for me. I'm planning on rolling that out, but that's where I've been. That's where me and my older brother have been. We're continuing to work with my younger brother. So that's what we're doing. So we're pouring that passion and energy into that. I Love Real Estate Stories is still there. We haven't made any new videos, and that's why, because we're working on something, a little something else.
Wow, man. Well, I had no idea, man. I'm sorry. My sincere, you know, condolences. And how can we support you in your new passion project? Like, where can people connect with you? What can we do to, you know, to just kind of help you and serve you however we can?
Yeah, that's awesome. I appreciate that, Alex, too. I Love Real Estate Stories. We're probably going to make that announcement there because we were working on this behind the scenes. So we'll post another video whenever that. So if you go subscribe to the YouTube channel, I Love Real Estate Stories, we'll post a video there just saying, hey guys, here's what we've been up to for 9 months. Because I've had a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, where's the video? Where's the video? So we'll definitely tell the audience there. We can say, look, you can, you know, sorry, we're cutting this one off, but you can come with us this new journey, or you guys are feel free to obviously go wherever you want to go. So if they go to ILoveRealEstateStories.com or that YouTube channel, subscribe, they'll know when it's rolled out. We'll let them know there. We'll let them know.
Very cool, man. Well, hey, dude, I really appreciate you jumping on, man, and just being so like open and forthcoming with like all the information, man. Very, very valuable. I know people are going to get a lot from this particular episode. So, man, it's awesome. Just keep crushing. Keep doing your thing. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, I've been following you from afar, man. I've picked up things, and I know you don't know that, but you know, when people share that kind of stuff with me, like, hey, you're making an impact, you're helping, it's just like fuel to my fire. And so I wanted to share that with you, man. I wanted to acknowledge you. And again, for the people listening, Andy and I, we have a ton of friends in common, but him and I have never spoken until like, you know, 45 minutes ago. And I reached out to him on Facebook. I'm like, man, I'd love to have you on the show. And like, in less than a minute, you're like, cool, done. And I thought that was super cool of you, man. So awesome to finally connect with you.
Well, let me say this, Alex, what you said is absolutely true, but I appreciate you and all people that are trying to do good in the world. And I know you're spreading good. You've got this circle of influence with your podcast, and all of you people listening to the podcast, you have a circle of influence too. So we're all influencing others for the good. So keep doing that. Keep growing. Keep influencing people in your sphere, whether it be big or small, keep doing that. So I appreciate you for sharing your influence and your good to the world and having that ripple effect to others. So thank you, Alex. And everybody else is probably thinking, yeah, thanks, Alex, because you guys are listening to this podcast and all of these other podcasts because of him and his efforts and he's doing. So thanks. Thank you, buddy.
Really appreciate that. Well, guys, just, you know, one of the things I want to leave you with is if you've been following the show for a while, you've heard me say this, but I think it's worth repeating. Speed of implementation. Take one or two things that you heard Andy share here and apply it to your business, because without that, I appreciate the time that you're investing into listening to the show, but that's not why I do this. I do this because I want you to take this information, apply it to your business, and then see the benefits and feel the rewards from that. So speed of implementation, you know, take one thing Andy shared here that you're not currently doing that you know you should be, apply it to your business and just move forward, you know, grow as a person. So look forward to catching you on the next show.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text Empire to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.